Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Clinical Cases podcast. And today we're going to be having a podcast on acute aortic syndromes. Now, acute aortic syndromes include aortic dissection, intramural hematoma, and penetrating aortic ulcer. They can also include aortic aneurysm rupture and a traumatic aortic injury, but the first three are what we concentrate on. Now, in today's podcast, we've got Dr. James Edwards going through aortic dissection. He talks about the recognition of potential signs, the chest pain plus criteria, investigations, including the low-risk criteria and using D-dimer, and then how we best image these patients. It's a great podcast. Have a listen to it. It's a very important diagnosis to make, and we have to be thinking about it because not all patients present with the standard symptoms of ripping, severe central chest pain, and they may have a pulse deficit or blood pressure differential, or they may have focal neurology. Some patients don't present with chest pain, and they can have some of the other symptoms that we'll hear about. This was recorded at Resus Core in Bali in 2023. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
So I'm going to talk a bit about aortic dissection. It's one of my kind of favourite topics. As an ED director, I seem to spend most of my time on root cause analysis or sayers about missed aortic dissections across the state. And I guess from an ED perspective, it is really like a needle in a haystack. When I speak to my cardiothoracic colleagues, they just can't believe how it could be missed. They see aortic dissections all the time. And they don't see, I guess, the breadth of patients that we see with so much atypical chest pain. So when we talk aortic dissection, I guess we classically think of the aortic dissection, but it actually has an aortic syndrome. It's acute aortic syndrome, which includes an intramural hematoma and a penetrating aortic ulcer, but by probably about 90% of these are the classic aortic dissection. This is a classification we both probably all learnt through medical school. Stanford classification is the one that's probably most used because it's probably most useful in regard to determining what the underlying management is, whether it's surgical or non-surgical. And really anything that involves the ascending aorta is a Stanford classification type A. There's a DeBakey classification as well, which isn't commonly used. I think one of the interesting stories about DeBakey, who was obviously a very famous vascular surgeon, he ended up having aortic dissection. At 96, he decided, I'm not going to have an operation. So, but he went unconscious. Ethics committee came in and they decided to do the operation on him, and he lived another 2 years. He was at that time the oldest person to be operated on, I think, for an aortic dissection. This is why it's so bad for an ED physician, because if you send them home, they may not come back. It's a relatively rare disease. I think within Australian, if you're seeing 100,000 per year, you expect between 5 and 10 aortic dissections to come in through your ED. Now, if you're working in a tertiary centre, we're a kind of cardiothoracic tertiary centre, we probably see more. We've got a Marfan's clinic, a whole bunch of sorts of things. We probably see more, but generally kind of 5 to 10 per 100,000. And this is the kind of classical characteristics of the pain. And I've got likelihood ratios, and I think anyone who's got a likelihood ratio greater than 10 is particularly helpful. So when you do have that tearing, ripping pain, it's particularly useful. You know, when they've got that, you're thinking they've got aortic dissection. That migratory pain, I'll talk about that, that moves from the chest to the abdomen to the legs is concerning. Sudden onset of pain, again, you like a ratio of 3. And that sudden onset of pain really makes me, when I think about aortic dissections, we should think about that the subarachnoid of chest pain. We've all learnt as one of the first things that sudden onset, worst headache ever, let's do a scan, make sure they've got a subarachnoid. We should be thinking the same for aortic dissection. 1 in 20 are painless. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to come into your waiting room with a sore ankle or they've got aortic dissection. They'll come in with something else. And it's predominantly neurology. They could come with a stroke-like syndrome or paraparesis. Sometimes they present with syncope. They present sometimes with kind of ischemia from malperfusion from either gut or renal. So they will present with something, but you don't have to have pain to make a diagnosis of aortic dissection. What findings are particularly helpful? So these findings are helpful, don't accept the likelihood ratio greater than 10. If you have chest pain plus focal neurological deficit, it's aortic dissection to a proven otherwise. If you've got that diastolic murmur, the classic murmur of aortic incompetence with chest pain, you thought you could have got aortic dissection. The pulse depth, as you can see, like a ratio of 3, it's not, you know, there's so much obsession about, oh, what are the blood pressures like in both arms? Lots of normal people without dissections have different blood pressure in both arms. So again, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but you shouldn't put too much emphasis on what the blood pressure differential between two arms in trying to rule out or determine, does this person have aortic dissection? So many people have heard this kind of concept of chest pain plus one equals dissection. When I say equals dissection, most of these people won't have a dissection. It just wants to make you think, if you've got chest pain plus one, think of dissection, because this is the kind of patient you need to rule out a dissection. As I mentioned before, chest pain plus neurology rule out a dissection. So whether it's a stroke or maybe some bilateral leg weakness, think about aortic dissection. I have seen a number of RCAs when people have had acute spinal cord issues where they've been thought to have an epidural abscess or transverse myelitis, and in MRI, the diagnosis has been made, or the people have arrested an MRI. In both of those cases I was involved in the ambulance paramedic information, it clearly said, and it's in the nursing notes, that they had mottled or cold legs. There was an issue with pulses. But I think we somehow got on, they've got a neurological problem, sudden onset back pain, I think they've got epidural abscess, and haven't considered that this could be a vascular cause. So whenever you'll see someone who's, the JMO presents to you, I think someone's got epidural abscess, obviously you've got to go see them, but just start thinking, making sure, could it be a vascular cause, just palpate their pulses. Chest pain plus syncope is high risk. It's high risk for lots of things. Could it be from ischemia and an arrhythmia? Could it be big PE? But also think, could it be aortic dissection? A few different reasons they can have it. Predominantly, they can have a dissect and cause a cardiac tamponade and they drop their blood pressure. But chest plane plus syncope equals dissection. That migratory plane, if they've got chest pain and abdominal pain, or the pain moves into the legs, that's an aortic dissection to prove otherwise. So, well, I've mentioned some historical features about the pain, some examination features, and also when we look at some of the predisposing factors, they've developed an aortic, acute aortic dissection risk score. And this is trying to work out, a bit like the Well score, to try and work out who could have an aortic dissection and what further investigations they need. And I think for the ED consultant, I think the important probably one is the knowledge of the predisposing factors. Now, Marfan's everyone knows. Kind of Marfan's that classic one that you learn in medical school. If someone comes with Marfan's and chest pain, everyone's going to probably get that one. But the more subtle ones about the family history of aortic valve disease, bicuspid aortic valve and chest pain, again, that was written in the notes, cut and pasted, as it always does. It was clear to see that they had a bicuspid aortic valve, but no one thought aortic dissection. Well, in retrospect, they go, well, that should have been aortic dissection. The pain features are really those at a high risk, as I mentioned. And similar with the examination features, those new murmurs, but also if they're shocked or unwell, think about aortic dissection, probably from a cardiac tamponade. So this was an Italian study, and this is a group that they really considered, could they have aortic dissection, because the actual prevalence was 22%, so fairly kind of tight group. And in this group, when they looked at the score, there was 6% who had a score of 0 and had dissection. But in all those groups, they had a normal chest x-ray. So despite, you could have said they came with chest pain, you're worried about a dissection and the chest x-ray was abnormal, despite having a dissection risk score of 0, maybe you could have made the diagnosis. With the ARDS score, you can either score 0, 1, 2 or 3. So if you have two predisposing features, you can still only call one per each group. So what investigators would we do? Someone comes with chest pain to get dissection. The first one everyone goes about the chest x-ray. Look at the chest x-ray, the classic widened mediastinum. And again, that one's fairly obvious. The cleaner who's walking past is probably going to diagnose that as wide. But not everyone without dissection has a widened mediastinum. And 20% of x-rays, even in retrospect, are normal. And I've seen plenty of chest x-rays that are said to be normal, and then they do a CTA, show a dissection, and then they've amended the report to say there was a widened mediastinum. But in retrospect, they still can be normal. So it leads us to somebody, we're concerned they could have a dissection. fairly good story. What are people's thoughts of that do? Okay, hands up who do a D-dimer. One, two, a couple of D-dimers. Who just jumped a CTA autogram? Who do a serotropone and let them go home? Who do a kind of point of care ultrasound? Okay. So CTA is a definitive test of choice. So if you want to make the dissection or exclude it, so if the CTA is negative, they're having a dissection. So it's that good a test. Occasionally you have allergy contrast, a reason they can't have contrast, and there are alternatives. One's a transesophageal echo, which is often difficult to get, depending on where you're working, especially after hours. And again, MRI is possible, but again, you don't tend to be taking potentially sick people with dissections to the MRI scanner. But they are potentials for those. You know, we see this occasionally things like a pregnancy, but often we would just go ahead and do a CTA. But CTAs come with harm. So the harm predominantly is things like radiation, because it's often can be in young people. Contrast, I mean, I've given a talk previously about contrast-induced nephropathy, whether it's a real thing or not. But again, that's something that is always raised. There are often the underlying reason behind people who have got chest pain, although it's not one of the defining risk factors, hypertension, smoking. So these are often vascular paths with chest pain that you want to do them on. The creatinine always comes back 160. You have a chat to a radiologist, oh, creatinine's 160, do we really want to do it? Yes. It doesn't matter what their renal function is. You want to make the diagnosis, you need to do the right test. Incidentalomas, if we do scans of people, we'll find other stuff that's probably not relevant. And resources. Now, as an ED director, what happens whenever dissections missed in the department, I'll come on the next morning or a week later, and there'll be like five people waiting for their CTA reports in my department, because everyone just doesn't want to miss it. You kind of overcompensate and do lots. And then the more you do, the more at risk. Point of care ultrasound. So point of care ultrasound has some real benefits. You know, it's non-invasive, especially with some school level ED physicians, can often identify some significant findings. And the findings typically give out a dilated aortic root, kind of intimal flap, sometimes you can see a cardiac tamponade. All those would make you suggestive that they've had aortic dissection. So, and this was another Italian study, and I think this really summarizes, if you think they've got an aortic dissection and they've got positive findings, they've probably got aortic dissection, but they still need a CTA. But it does make that phone call, if you don't work at a cardiothoracic center, it makes that phone call much easier. You can ring and transfer to the hospital and say, I've got someone with chest pain, it was tearing, I can see a little intimal flap, can they go have this other CTA at your hospital or the cardiothoracic hospital? But unfortunately, you can't rule out dissection with a point of care ultrasound. If it's normal, it doesn't exclude dissection. Again, it would only be good for the type A dissections. It obviously doesn't going to help you much with a type B. There's a lot of interest in D-dimer, and we've used D-dimer predominantly for pulmonary emboli, risk replication, and there's some evidence that similarly to pulmonary emboli, people with a higher D-dimer are more likely to have aortic dissection. And how could we integrate that with a D-dimer, especially that aortic risk detection score? So this is a meta-analysis done by Steve Asher, who's one of our ED physicians at St. George in New South Wales, and actually showed that it had pretty good sensitivity and specificity of using that D-dimer. Similarly, they've done other things using the score plus D-dimer, and the D-dimer for this risk aortic dissection is a cutoff. So at the moment, unlike what we've done with PE, where you've got kind of age-adjusted D-dimers, currently the evidence is really only that D-dimer of 500. Again, you'll miss a few 1 in 170, but generally it's fairly good at ruling out aortic dissection. Another study looked at the kind of ARDS spectral score was pretty good at ruling out dissections. Sorry about that slide. But using D-dimer wouldn't actually help too much about reducing your CTA audiograms. So it's not like if you do a D-dimer, suddenly you're ruling a whole bunch of people out. If you thought they had dissection and your D-dimer, you may do a few less, maybe one half less. But it really depends on the group you do it in. So positive predictive values are really dependent on the population you do it in. If you do it in a very low-risk population, lots of D-dimers, you'll get lots of kind of false positives. If you do it when you really think they've got a dissection, it actually be a reasonable test. So this is how I think we should be managing chest pain. So you have aortic dissection, you're worried about it, you risk stratify them. If they're high risk, they get a CTA. If they're low risk, have a D-dimer, and if the D-dimer is negative, they go home. But that won't be how it works. I know how it works. Everyone with chest pain will get the D-dimer first, and then after that, once I've seen them 3 hours later, they've come back to me. Oh, someone said their chest pain was a bit funny. We've done a D-dimer, it's high. Do you think they could have a dissection? And I would have never considered a dissection, but now the D-dimer's there, I go, oh yeah, I guess so. What will happen is I'll do lots and lots of CTAs. So again, the D-dimer is actually a reasonable test, but we do it, what we will do it in real life, in the wrong population. And I think we see that with PEs all the time. So what do we do in ED management? Dissection is really about the diagnosis in ED. You know, it's, there's obviously some management, but it's really making that diagnosis. Control pain, so I usually use fentanyl. I probably wouldn't use ketamine for analgesia, but probably morphine or fentanyl would be appropriate. Use beta blockade. Any beta blocker you have is okay. Generally intravenous is best. We use IV esmolol. But if you can't get IV esmolol, sometimes, you know, it's half an hour trying to find the esmolol from ICU, just give us some IV metoprolol. You want to try to bring the rate down to lower than 60. Again, generally with good analgesia and a beta blocker infusion, often the blood pressure will come down, but it hasn't come down at another blood pressure. I must say, we started using IV clavetabine, a kind of calcium channel blocker, but you can use GTN if you've actually made sure the heart rate's already come down. You're always concerned about GTN, you get a reflex tachycardia, so you have to be beta blocked before you start that antihypertensives. Important to put an ART line in, and for type A, get cath rates to come down and see them. And surgical repair is the management. For type B, it's actually more medical management, although increasingly used kind of endovascular stents. It's definitely got lots of pain and maybe some malperfusion from the dissection. So my keys, you know, involve, that's all the cardiothoracic surgeons tell me, these, ring us early. We're excited about every chest pain. Just ring us early, we'll come down and see them. I know that's not true, they always ask, tell me what the CTA shows. If you think they're a dissection, then you get involved early, you may start the beta block with them before they go to CT, there's going to be a delay, but it's more than reasonable just to go ahead and get that CTA done. IV analgesia with morphine or usually fentanyl. Put an ART line in, and just often you can put ART lines in both sides sometimes and aim for actually the higher blood pressure. One thing that does come up sometimes, especially if you work in a peripheral hospital, it's really hard. They've got severe PET chest pain going through the back and they've got a STEMI. What do you do? Ideally, because you're worried if you give them thrombolysis and they've got a dissection, they'll tamponade and die. But if you don't give them thrombolysis, then you don't treat their STEMI. It is easier if you're working in a centre that has PCI. So take them to the PCI. We tend to give them some heparin. I wouldn't give them some clopidogrel or ticagrelor, and then they go to the cath lab. Now, at the cath lab, they can see the dissection, and sometimes the dissection is dissected up to the current one of the coronary arteries, and therefore they can actually manage that. Generally, for left-sided ones, sometimes that malperfusion of that STEMI will actually get better with some intervention, but generally after that they'll need to go for a procedure. So usually we'll get a toe and then go to the operating theatre for a management of their type A dissection. So this is my last one. It was probably about D-dimer because it's probably the most controversial part of this kind of talk. I don't think the D-dimer is a bad test. I just think we use it in the wrong way. So if you have a patient who you probably don't think has a aortic dissection, but they've got something, maybe one risk factor or not, it'd be reasonable to do a D-dimer. Or they've got one risk factor, go ahead and do a CTA, as more than reasonable. Great, thank you.